You are listening to Mind Over Matters here on KEXP 90.3 FM Seattle. It is 7:30 and time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us this morning Jeff Siddiqui, who is with the American Muslims of Puget Sound, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with Jeff from hearing him on our monthly program Deep Water. He is one of the five regular contributors. Jeff, thank you for coming in this morning. Let's talk about the situation with the current war on terrorism here in the U.S. The realities for those of us that are of European descent, I think, are a little bit different than those who are part of the Muslim Americans, Arab descent. And I was hoping we could discuss some of the issues surrounding that.
Well, the issues for Arabs and Muslims, and as you know, Arabs are not necessarily Muslims. 20% of them are Christians. The issues for us are rather dark. John Ashcroft decided he's going to have a war against terrorism. And to some degree, America is right to have a war against terrorism. Who would not want to have a war against terrorism? And especially after the September 11 tragedy, there is absolutely no reason for us to tolerate anything or any activity that could possibly be translated into another tragedy for United States or anyone else. But the problem is the way John Ashcroft is going about this war on terrorism is what is, it looks to us like it's a war against Muslims and Arabs. People are being jailed. Up until some months ago, at least, the numbers were being given by the government. And at the time, the numbers kept climbing almost on a weekly basis until they reached about, I think, 1,200 people arrested. And these were people arrested on no charges at all. Then suddenly, the government realized that these increasing numbers of people who are arrested and are not being charged and just being held in jail indefinitely, it would seem, because they weren't being brought to trial, was an embarrassing thing. So the government decided, we're not going to even tell you how many people are in jail anymore. And by the way, we've released all but about 400. And we're just going to not tell you anymore. What happened with that is now people are being arrested, people are being taken to jail, they're not being charged, they're not being allowed access to lawyers, and you can't really have access to lawyers because they're not telling you who's in jail. Suddenly, Jeff Siddiqui disappears. And everybody wants to know where he is. Jeff's family knows that the immigration or the feds in some department or the other came in, guns cocked and pointing, took Jeff Siddiqui and put him in jail. Where is he? Is he even in Seattle? Is he even in the state? No, we don't know. And the State Department will not tell us. That is a terrifying prospect for people. There was one Pakistani family that was taken to jail just recently. I think it was this month sometime. And overnight they came, the parents, the man, husband and wife, were put in the immigration jail here on Airport Way. And the two children, who were 13 and 14, were not put in the immigration jail. They were put in the juvenile detention center in Yakima. Now that... It just blows my mind that our government, a responsible government, a bastion of democracy that has a constitution like we do, should even stoop to tactics like that. And the Arabs and Muslims in this whole country are terrified. They might not express it to the average Joe, but when two of us get together, literally the only thing we talk about is what a horrible thing it is that's happening to us over here.
So it's a little bit different view of terrorism then.
It absolutely is, because people who are being arrested are being arrested for their color, their religion, and their name. The problem is not that they're arresting five people who were involved with the aircrafts crashing in New York Towers or Pentagon. The problem is they're grabbing people. Now, by the way, this is very interesting. The reason why they're being detained is because the word arrest doesn't come in. The Constitution doesn't kick in until you've arrested somebody. So we detain people. And then, even then, there's an argument that can be made that, well, technically, you should go to a speedy trial. You should be accused of the crime. You know, the Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendments kind of kick in, which is very inconvenient for the government. But, so what they do is they say, what else can we do here? Now, clearly, then the government makes a distinction between who's a citizen and who's not. Because then they detain people who are not citizens under immigration charges. Like this person overstayed his visa. This person lied on an English proficiency test. Now, these are charges that normally you just laugh and say, get off my back, go get lost. But the reason for them is very clear. If you hold somebody on visa violations, that person doesn't have to be charged. And so you get into these technicalities that the normal American citizen doesn't realize why these people are being charged with visa violations. The real reason they're being charged with visa violations is because you don't have to get into constitutional protections from the government's point of view.
So what do you imagine is the, what is the government gaining out of all this? I mean, clearly they're picking up people that aren't connected with September 11th. What do they get out of this?
You know, if I knew that, I'd have a book published and I'd be a millionaire retired, because the whole world would want to buy that book. We don't know. It is diabolical. What the government is doing is nothing short of evil. And it shames me to say that, because I am a very proud citizen of this country. And I want to believe that everything we do in this country and by this country stands for what is good and what is just. But here it is my government that is involved in tactics that I would only believe a third world dictatorship would do. We're not very far away from what the guy we love to hate, Saddam Hussein, we're not very far away from what he would do. People disappear. What is the government gaining from it? I don't know. The situation is so weird that early in the game you might call it, I think it was around December or January of last year or this year, some cases were brought up to the courts, and the FBI, the immigration, not the FBI, the immigration people said to the courts, Your Honor, we recognize, we understand, and we accept that these people, the ones that whose case came up to court, these people are in violation of their visa requirements, and they have actually told us that they are in violation and they are willing to leave the country. We accept all that. And right now, Your Honor, we do not have any proof that ties them in any way with terrorism or with the September 11 tragedy. But on the other hand, these people have not given us any proof that conclusively releases them from that connection either. So we would like to hold them. At another time, John Ashcroft said to the courts, and these are John Ashcroft's pretty much his exact words, we cannot individually tie these people to any act or event. But each one that we're holding in jail is like a small piece of a mosaic. His words, not mine. And he said, in their own individual self, that piece of mosaic is meaningless. But we want to keep collecting these people. Collecting, nice sterile word. So that maybe, if we catch enough of them, a pattern will develop from the mosaic. Now, what a horrible way to portray the ruining of innocent people's lives. Consider that the people who are in jail right now have families, they have loans that they were paying, they had jobs that they were working on, if not here, then in their own home country. And they've been in jail for months now. Their families are ruined because there's no money coming into the families. Their jobs are finished because nobody's going to hold your jobs indefinitely. Their credit is ruined because they're not paying anything towards their credit. All for what?
The media likes to talk about how much all our lives have changed since September 11th. They seem to, leave out this important part of what's really happening.
Well, this is the third tragedy in the United States since September 11th. The first, of course, was the tragedy of the aircraft crashing in and killing all the people. The second tragedy was the government going off into this deep end of arresting people and ruining lives. And the third tragedy, and I think it's not just a tragedy, it is a crime of major proportions. The third tragedy and crime is that America is silent in the face of all this. Our Congress can do nothing except applaud the government. Our Congress has lost its character, its spine, its will, and anything that possibly, any shred of decency they had, has disappeared in this war of terrorism. Congress was there as one of the three branches of government. We've learned in school, we keep saying this again and again, that the three branches of government, the judiciary, the executive, and Congress, are there for checks and balances so that one doesn't exceed its power. And what do? We sit there, a bunch of 500 or so people in the House and Senate, mute, struck dumb. They cannot say anything because they're afraid they will be seen as supporters of terrorism. Just like when John Ashcroft went into Senate for a hearing, the very first words he used pretty much were, anyone who criticizes what we're doing right now is helping terrorism. It was as if a lightning bolt had struck the Senate. After that, nobody said a word. They rolled over like a pet poodle. He harangued them. And then he tickled the poodle's stomach, walked away, and Senate gave him a standing ovation. Whereas they should have put him in irons. But they didn't. We are in the throes of a situation whose only equivalent is the height of the anti-communist hysteria in this country. People don't want to say anything because they're afraid of being called communists. Right now, they don't want to say anything because they're afraid of being called terrorists or terrorist sympathizers. All our politicians, because our politicians really, this is my opinion, they don't really care what happens to America. They don't care what happens to you, what happens to me, or what happens to the economy. The only thing they seem to care about is their re-election prospects. And they will sell America downriver so that they can get re-elected. There are very few people with character in this country, unfortunately, with character in our House and Senate. And there's only one that I can think of in this whole state, and that is Jim McDermott. All the other guys, they're stuck dumb. They cannot squeeze out the words "stop" to John Ashcroft. Whereas what they should really be doing is launching a major inquiry, passing not mute, toothless resolutions or sense of Congress and sense of Senate things, but actual laws that say you will not do this. John Ashcroft is so full of himself right now that just last week, a court in New Jersey said, no, this is illegal. You will disclose, not you should or you must, you will disclose the names of people that you have detained under these things. This just happened last week. And John Ashcroft turns around and says, no. To the judge, he says, no. The state of New Jersey has been told by the federal government through the INS, Immigration and Naturalization Service, no, you will not reveal who you have detained. I think that is atrocious.
You've been one of the few inconsistent voices that has been bringing light to this whole dark situation. And I know you've been getting some coverage on, you've been on several radio shows and been part of some forums.
Yes. You
certainly could be included in many more of them. But one of the consistent denominators on these different forums on terrorism seems to be the lack of defining what terrorism is.
If it wasn't so tragic, that would be the funniest single part or the only humorous part of this whole series of events since September 11, and actually even since before September 11. Our government has been waging a war of varying intensities against terrorism, but they do not define terrorism. And when they do, when they're really squeezed, up until September 11, there were half a dozen different definitions of terrorism emanating from the government, depending on which department you talk to, FBI, DEA, all these other alphabet soup enforcement agencies. Then after September 11, the government said, you guys got to get your stuff together here, and let's, by the way, pass this Patriot Act of 2001, which, incidentally, is the single greatest tragedy against the Constitution in this country, but that's a later subject. So the government came up with a definition of terrorism that is crafted so finely that it just isolates and singles out people and small groups, and that's it. And only those that the government wants to isolate and says, these are terrorists. If you really look at that definition, all it says is, if you're an individual or if you're a group and if we don't like you, you're a terrorist. And if you read that definition, for example, now here's one non-controversial picture that I think everyone will agree with. Saddam Hussein is a terrible dictator and despot, and he, I don't believe, is doing a single thing or has done a single thing that's good for people anywhere in the world, let alone Iraq. And people wishing to flee Iraq can only be applauded and encouraged, because, I mean, who would want to live in a place like that? So let's say somebody in Iraq steals a government car or a government jeep and races across the border and says, help, help, here's my family in this car, and we escaped from Iraq because Saddam's goons are after us with machine guns, and we are just 5 minutes ahead of them. According to our definition of law, those people are terrorists. They need to be arrested and they need to be put away for the rest of their lives because they stole government property in the furtherance of their activities. It is ridiculous. And at the same time, the government completely ignores governments. So the people who stole that vehicle are terrorists. But according to our definition, Saddam and his government is not a terrorist government. That is completely on its head. And when you look at terrorism, I believe terrorism is a manifestation of the frustration of a certain group. A certain group or individuals that feel like they've been left out, they have no voice, no options, and they're oppressed, and they're about to be killed or reduced to a spot where death is a preferable alternative. When people are that desperate, they will act with violence. In fact, our government encourages people to act with violence when we paint them to be in that desperate a picture. Take Iraq again. We are arming and helping the Kurds actively to rise up and stay risen up against Saddam Hussein. And we don't care how many Iraqis they kill as long as they're fighting Saddam Hussein. That's directly terrorism. In Nicaragua, we were helping the Contras directly against the Sandinistas, even with what we clearly call terrorist training. In Colombia, in Costa Rica, I mean, you name the South American country, and we're up to our hips in promoting activities that are terrorist, killing people, kidnapping people, blowing up places, but when we decide that we don't like a certain group, that group becomes terrorist. On the other hand, the government that kills people, the government that blows up buildings, the government that commits genocide is not terrorist by our definitions. And then we wonder why everyone hates us. Because we cannot help but arm people like that. And then when you see the family there whose children have just been killed by guns and money that we have provided, who are they going to hate? They're going to hate their oppressors and the financiers of that oppression. And that comes to our table. So terrorism is a huge subject. If we just keep it at home here in the United States, that's fine by me. But what I'm saying is, we have a very hypocritic attitude towards terrorism, which we need to clarify. We have a country and we have a constitution that has the potential of making us the moral beacons for the world. Unfortunately, and we have a people, the American people are among the most generous, the most giving, the most wide open people I have had the pleasure of coming across. But our government is completely our opposite, and I cannot understand how that can be. But it is. And unless you and I and the people listening or people who are doing any thinking at all can stand up and put our politicians on a very uncomfortable position every time we face them, they will continue to remain silent. And the biggest sin is silence. The Jews that were killed, the gypsies, the millions that were slaughtered by Hitler and have been slaughtered since, the many more millions have been slaughtered since, were only slaughtered because of silence of the neighbors and the people involved in that action. And that is our single biggest crime.
Yeah, it seems the whole reason that the government is obviously so out of control is due in large part to all our individual silence. So how do we, you've been raising your voice to this in an atmosphere that's been pretty hostile towards your speaking out. How do you find the courage to do that?
Well, I just figure the people who are being hostile don't understand the situation. And I don't have a choice. I have to speak out. If I don't speak out, I wouldn't be able to live with myself. I can't expect everyone to go out with quite the wild abandon that I seem to be doing. But it is our duty as human beings, as individual human beings, not to sit silently. We must do something. If it means pick up the phone and make a call, do that. If it means writing a letter, do that. If you have a computer, send an email. Or, at the very least, get out there and vote and make sure you vote and tell the people how you're going to vote, the candidates. And whenever you meet one of these guys, and I would suggest we should seek out opportunities to meet them. Not just say, well, if Maria Cantwell or Patty Murray bump into me while I'm on a bus heading towards downtown Seattle, by God, I'm going to give her a piece of my mind. That's a very safe statement to make because it ain't going to happen. The point is, find a venue where Maria Cantwell or Patty Murray or any one of our many gutless wonders that call themselves senators and representatives are, and ask them point blank, why did you vote for the Patriot Act of 2001 that clearly undercuts the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, and the Sixth Amendment of the Constitution, of the Bill of Rights? Why would you do a thing like that? When the very first thing you did as your office was to take the oath to defend the Constitution. And why are you silent in the face of that? And why are you letting the government get away just with everything short of murder? and just make it really difficult for them to walk away with a bland answer. And if they send you if you write them a letter against what's happening under the Bush government, don't be satisfied or don't say your duty is done if they send you a letter saying, yes, the senator shares with you, the senator is equally concerned about the rising price of potatoes in Idaho. Because that's what you'll get. You send a letter and you'll get a letter that's completely different from what you said. Call them back and say, hey, I didn't say that. I need an answer. And if you've got a group of six people, ask for an appointment. If they don't give you an appointment, walk into their office and tell them, we're really upset. Why are you doing this? You're doing this on my nickel, on my name, and you're representing my government. I need you out of here. And remember, elections are just a few months away. These guys are going to be very sensitive to what you and I say. And they're also going to be very sensitive to what we don't say. So if you don't say it, they're going to continue to do things that will help them stay in office. Because they know that if you say nothing, if you're silent, they know that their lack of action has drawn no criticism. So that's a risk-free thing to be taken for granted. Now let's move and curry favor with people who've got the money. And we're left out again, wondering what happened. Now, once they're elected, then you've got two more years of hypocrisy and tyranny and selfish, self-serving actions. We can't let that happen. If it means voting for a party that's going to fail, go ahead and do it. I think Ralph Nader did us a huge favor when he brought in the Green Party and Al Gore lost. I'm not saying George Bush was a better example to take than Al Gore. But what it did is it told the Republicans and it told the Democrats, you can't take everybody for granted. And the middle of the road Democrats who voted for Ralph Nader have now just become very significant. And the Democrats are highly likely to pay attention to them this time around. But what they're going to do is they're going to try the fear tactic. See, you didn't vote and look who came in power. Because they haven't learned the lesson yet. But if you vote again and say, no, you guys are still on the wrong side, we're going to vote for Jack the Ripper, but we're not going to vote for you. I guarantee you the next time these guys are going to pay attention.
Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. Talking with Jeff Siddiqui this morning, who is with the American Muslims of Puget Sound and, of course, one of the five regular contributors to Deep Water, a show you can hear here on KEXP, the first Sunday of every month at 7 a.m. Jeff, thank you for coming in this morning.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.